So, good evening or good morning, depending on where you are, and we're going to start by chanting Jai Radhamadava and then continue with the reading of the Nectar Devotion. We don't have much more left in the Nectar Devotion to finish it. Wow, just a few more pages. Okay, and then we'll figure out where we're going to go after the Nectar Devotion. Jai Radhamadava Kunda Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunda Bihari Gopi Jana Balabha Giri Bharadati Gopi Jana Balabha Giri Bharadati Yashoda Nandana Vrajajana Ranjana Yasoda Nandana Vrajajana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Vardhati Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Vardhati Yashoda Nandana Vrajajana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Vrajajana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Paravitikacharya Osutena Satishi Shimad His Divine Grace Savaya Chalanada Bhaktivananda Goswami Srila Prabhupada Kijai Iskan Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Kijai, Ananta Koti, Vaishnava Vrinda Kijai, Namacharya, Srila Kuidas Thakur Kijai, Prabhu Nityananda, Shidwaita Gadadha Kijai, Shishi, Radha Krishna Gopikapatnath, Sayam Kunda, Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Kijai, Vrindavanam Kijai, Vajuram Kijai, Jagadatasami Kijai, Yamunamai Kijai, Shimani Dalasi Devi Kijai, Samaveda Bhakta Vrindi Kijai, Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bo. All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Shi. Guru and Gauranga, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale, Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Namani Namaste, Saraswati Devi, Gauravani Pacharani Nivashesha Sundabadi, Paschacha Deja Tarane, Omagana Tugananda Shaganjana Shlakya, Chakshura Miritam Yena Tasmai Shigarabeda Maha, Offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual masters, Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, so because with the torchlight of knowledge, while my eyes were blinded in the darkness of ignorance. So, before we start, I just wanted to show you a brief glimpse of what we have every morning in our temple here in New Goloka. We have actually professional dancing for the deities, and I'll show you this online. Hold on one second. Right, give me one second. There is Dutch. notes. I was trying to show it. Let me just turn that on. Let's see if I can show it. Showing that window. That's weird. Anyway, I guess Krishna doesn't want me to show this because I can't see it on all the windows. Let me try to eliminate some windows here. Anyway, wanted to show you the dancing we have, but it is not showing up in one of the windows that I can show. Actually, I could show you. No. Okay, forget about it. Somehow or other. Somehow or other, it is not showing up. Just let me try one more time using a different app. Better. Okay, let's try this. There we go. It's gonna work now. You'll see we have a professional dancer every morning. Okay. Okay, now we'll go on to Nectar Devotion. See, we have a very exciting morning program every morning. Dancing, music, everything is there to see what you are all missing by being immersed in Krishna's illusory energy. In your homes. Jeev Jago, Jeev Jago. Gorachanda Bole, Kota. Hey. Wake up, sleep. Will you be sleeping in the lap of the witch called Maya? Thinking you can enjoy this material world. Okay, on that happy note, we are going to. Go to Nectar of Devotion. Here we go. And we're reading right now, of course, Brad, the parental affection. Here we are. Alrighty, let me clear the screen so we can all see. Okay, so I can see at least. I have to read. So the general activities of all the mothers of the coward boys were to kiss them, to embrace them, to call them by their names, and sometimes to chastise them mildly for their stealing habits. These manifestations of parental love are called sattvika ecstasy. Remember we talked about the different bhavas remember. Stai Bhava, Vyabhachari Bhava, Ashtasattvika Bhava, Vibhava, Anubhava. So this is called Sattvika Ecstasy. In other words, they're always there. Where in the manifestations of eight kinds, Ashta means eight, kinds of ecstatic symptoms are visible in full. In Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, 13th chapter, verse 22, Shukadeva Goswami tells King Parikshit, all the mothers of the coward boys were illusioned by the covering influence of the Yogamaya potency of the personality of Godhead, and as soon as they heard the flute playing of their boys, they immediately stood up and mentally embraced their sons who had been created by the direct internal potency of Krishna. Accepting them as their born sons, they lifted them into their arms and began to embrace them, resting their children's bodies upon their own. The emotions created by this incident were sweeter than nectar, turned into a palatable intoxicant, and the milk flowing out of their breasts was immediately drunk up by the children. And the Lalita Madhava, compiled by Śrīla Rūpa Goswami, Krishna is addressed as follows. My dear Krishna, when you are engaged in herding the animals, the dust caused by the hooves of the cows and calves and cows covers your nice face, an artistic tilak, and you appear very dusty. But when you return home, the milk flowing out of the breasts of your mother washes your face of its dust covering, and you appear to be purified by this milk, just as when the deity is washed during the performance of the Abhishek ceremony. It is the custom in the temples of the deities that if there have been some impure activities, the deity has to be washed with milk. Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead, and he was washed by the milk from the breast of Mother Yashoda, which purified him from the dust covering. Sometimes there are examples of Mother Yashoda's becoming stunned in ecstasy. This was exhibited when she saw her son lifting Govardhan Hill. When Krishna was standing, raising the hill, Mother Yashoda hesitated to embrace him and became stunned. The dangerous position that Krishna had accepted by lifting the hill brought tears to her eyes. With her eyes filled with tears, she could not see Krishna anymore, and because her throat was choked up by anxiety, she could not even instruct Krishna as to what he should do in that position. This is a symptom of being stunned in ecstatic love. Of course, that's a Vyabhachari Bhava. Remember, we study about the Bhavas. Mother Yashoda sometimes enjoyed transcendental ecstasy and happiness when her child was saved from a dangerous situation, such as being attacked by Putana, who was a witch, or some other demon. In Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, 17th chapter, verse 19, Shukadeva Goswami says that Mother Yashoda felt very, very fortunate when she got back her lost child. She immediately placed him on her lap and began to embrace him again and again. While she was thus embracing her son, repeatedly torrents of tears fell from her eyes and she was unable to express her transcendental joy. It is stated in the Vidagdha Madhava of Śrīla Rūpa Goswami, quote, my dear Krishna, the touch of your mother is so pleasing and cooling that it surpasses the cooling capacity of the pulp of sandalwood and a bright moonshine mixed with the pulp of ushiro root. And it's described here that ushira is a kind of root which, when soaked with water, has a very, very cooling effect. It is especially used in the scorching heat of the sun. The parental love of Mother Yashoda for Krishna steadily increases, and her love and ecstasy are sometimes described as intense affection and sometimes as overwhelming attachment. An example of attachment for Krishna with overwhelming affection is given in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, 6th chapter, verse 43, where Shukadeva Goswami addresses Maharaj Parikshit in this way. My dear king, when magnanimous Nanda Maharaj returned from Mathura, he began to smell the head of his son and he was merged in the connection with Mother Yashoda. When she was expecting him back from the pasturing ground, because she thought that it was getting very late, her anxiety to hear the sound of Krishna's flute became doubled and milk began to flow from her breast. In that condition, she was sometimes going within the house, sometimes coming out of the house. She was constantly looking to see if Govinda was coming back along the road. When many very great sages were offering prayers to Lord Krishna, glorifying his activities, the queen of Gokula, Mother Yashoda, entered the battlefield of Kurukshetra, wetting the lower part of her sari with the milk flowing from her breast. This entrance of Mother Yashoda at Kurukshetra was not during the battle of Kurukshetra, obviously. At other times, Krishna went to Kurukshetra from his paternal home to work during the solar eclipse, and at these times, the residents of Vrindavan also went to see him there, so it wasn't during the battle. But Kurukshetra is a holy place, as we hear in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita. What is it? Dharmakshetra, Kurukshetra, Samaveta, Yuyutsavaha, Mamaka, Pandavas, Jaiva, Kimakorvata, Sanjaya. I mean, that's basically the beginning of Bhagavad Gita. That Kurukshetra is Dharmakshetra, it's a holy place. So people go there when there's some religious ceremony to perform. When Krishna arrived in Kurukshetra in pilgrimage, all the people assembled there began to say that Krishna, the son of Devaki, had arrived. At that time, Devaki, just like an affectionate mother, began to pat Krishna's face. And again, when people cried that Krishna, the son of Vasudeva, had come, both King Nanda and Mother Yashoda became overwhelmed with affection and expressed their great pleasure. When Mother Yashoda, the queen of Gokula, was going to see her son Krishna at Kurukshetra, one of her friends addressed her thus, "My dear queen, the milk flowing out of your breast mountain has already whitened the river Ganges, and the tears from your eyes mixed with black mascara have already blackened the color of the Yamuna. And as you were standing just between the two rivers, I think that there is no need for your anxiety to see your son's face. Your parental affection has already been exhibited to him by these two rivers." Very poetic. The same friend of Mother Yashoda addressed Krishna as follows, "My dear Mukunda, if Mother Yashoda, the queen of Gokula, is forced to stand on fire, but is allowed to see your lotus face, then this fire will appear to her like the Himalaya mountains full of ice. In the same way, if she is allowed to stay in the ocean of nectar, but is not allowed to see the lotus face of your grace, then even this ocean of nectar will appear to her like an ocean of arsenic poison. Let the anxiety of Mother Yashoda and Braj, always expecting to see the lotus face of Krishna, be glorified all over the universe." Wow. A similar statement was given by Kunti Devi to Akrura. "My dear brother, Akrura, my nephew Mukunda is long absent from us. Will you kindly tell him that his aunt Kunti is sitting among the enemy and would like to know when she will be able to see his lotus face again?" In Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th Canto, 46th chapter, verse 28, there's this statement. When Uddhava was present at Vrindavan and was narrating the activities of Krishna and Dwarka, Mother Yashoda, while hearing this narration, began to pour milk from her breast and shed tears from her eyes. Another incident demonstrating Yashoda's extreme love for Krishna occurred when Krishna went to Mathura, the kingdom of Kamsa. In separation from Krishna, Mother Yashoda was looking at Krishna's makeup utensils and she fell down on the ground almost unconscious with a great sound. When she was rolling over on the ground, there were many scratches on her body. And in that piteous condition, she began to cry, "Oh, my dear son, my dear son." And she slapped her breast with her two hands. This activity of Mother Yashoda is explained by expert devotees as ecstatic love in separation. Sometimes there are many other symptoms, such as great anxiety, lamentation, frustration, being stunned, humility, restlessness, madness, and illusion. As far as Mother Yashoda's anxieties are concerned, when Krishna was out of the house in the pasturing ground, a devotee once told her, "Yashoda, I think your movements have been slackened. I see that you are full of anxieties. Your two eyes appear to be without any movement, and I feel in your breathing a kind of warmth, which is bringing your breast milk to the boiling point. All these conditions prove that at a separation from your son, you have a severe headache." These are some of the symptoms of Mother Yashoda's anxiety for Krishna. So these are some examples being given from the Shastras about the love that Krishna's mothers, both Devaki, Krishna's fathers, Nanda Maharaj, and others too. When Akura was present in Vrindavan and was narrating the activities of Krishna and Dwarka, Mother Yashoda was informed that Krishna had married so many queens and was very busy there in his household affairs. Hearing this, Mother Yashoda lamented how unfortunate she was that she could not get her son married just after he passed his Kaishora age, and that she therefore could not receive both her son and daughter-in-law at her home. She exclaimed, "My dear Krura, you are simply throwing thunderbolts on my head." These are signs of lamentation on the part of Mother Yashoda in separation from Krishna. And actually, there's a kund in Vrindavan, I think it's called Pilu Kund, he's yellow kund, in which Yashoda Mai one time smeared turmeric on the hands of Srimati Radharani that indicated that she was going to marry Krishna. And so Srimati Radharani was very embarrassed by that, and she washed them in this kund, and this kund is still yellow to this day. But actually, there were many secret marriages in Vrindavan, so in essence, Krishna did marry Radharani. Many, many secret marriages. One of them was conducted by Lord Brahma. Similarly, Mother Yashoda felt frustration when she thought, "Although I have millions of cows, the milk of these cows could not satisfy Krishna. Therefore, let a curse be on this milk. And I'm also condemned because although I'm so opulent in material prosperity, I am now unable to smell the head of my child and feed him with my breast milk as I used to do when he was here in Vrindavana." This is a sign of frustration on the part of Mother Yashoda in separation from Krishna. One friend of Krishna's addressed him thus, "My dear lotus-eyed one, when you were living in Gokula, you were always bearing a stick in your hand. That stick is now lying idle in the house of Mother Yashoda, and whenever she sees it, she becomes motionless just like the stick. This is a sign of becoming stunned in separation from Krishna, Bhavachari Baba. In separation from Krishna, Mother Yashoda became so humble that she prayed to the creator of the universe, Lord Brahma, with tears in her eyes. My dear creator, won't you kindly bring my dear son Krishna back to me so that I can see him at least for a moment? Sometimes in restlessness, like a mad woman, Mother Yashoda used to accuse Nanda Maharaj, 'What are you doing in the palace, you shameless man? Why do people call you the king of Braj? It is very astonishing that while being separated from your dear son Krishna, you are still living within Vrindavan as a hard-hearted father.'" Someone informed Krishna about the madness of Mother Yashoda in the following words. "In madness, Mother Yashoda has addressed the Kadamba trees and inquired from them, 'Where is my son?' Similarly, she has addressed the birds and the drones and inquired from them whether Krishna has passed before them. And she has inquired if they can say anything about you. In this way, Mother Yashoda, in illusion, was asking everybody about you, and she's been wandering all over Vrindavan. This is madness and separation from you." Let me just check. Separation from Krishna, sorry, not from you. I was just reading the book at the same time. Can you see how much longer we got? We're almost finished with this chapter. When Nanda Maharaj was accused by Mother Yashoda of being hard-hearted, he replied, "My dear Yashoda, why are you becoming so agitated? Kindly look more carefully. Just see your son Krishna is standing before you. Don't become a mad woman like this. Please keep my home peaceful." And Krishna was informed by some friend that his father Nanda was also in illusion in this way in separation from him. In other words, Krishna was not in front of Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda Mai. Krishna was in Mathura. And Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda Mai were just like going completely crazy in separation out of pure love, Vyabhachari Bhava, ecstasy. When all the wives of Vasudeva were present in the arena of Kamsa, they saw the most pleasing bodily features of Krishna, and immediately, out of parental affection, milk began to flow from their breasts, and the lower parts of their saris became wet. This symptom of ecstatic love is an example of the result of fulfillment of desire. In the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th chapter, verse 29, it is stated when Krishna entered Dwarka after finishing the battle of Kurukshetra, he first of all saw his mother and all of his different stepmothers and offered his respectful obeisances unto their feet. The mothers immediately took Krishna upon their laps, and because of their parental affection, there was milk flowing out of their breasts. So their breast milk mixed with the water of tears became the first offering to Krishna. This is one of the examples of being satisfied after a great separation. There's a similar statement in the Lalita Madhava. How wonderful it is that you for Krishna, mixed her tears in the milk from Krishna. In the Dagda Madhava, a devotee addresses Lord Krishna as follows. My dear Mukunda, after seeing your face, which was full with the scent of the lotus flower, Mother Yashoda, being attracted by the moonlight of your face, became so overjoyed in her affection that immediately from the nipples of a water pot breast, milk began to flow. She was thus constantly engaged in supplying milk to Krishna after wetting the covering cloth over the jug. These are some of the signs of parental love for Krishna by his mother, his father, and elderly persons. Symptoms of ecstatic love and parental affection are expressed when Krishna is accepted as the son. These constant transcendental emotions for Krishna are called steady ecstasy in parental love. And the word for steady ecstasy is sthayi bhava, steady emotion. Remember that? Vibhava, Anubhava, Sattvika Bhava, Vyavachari Bhava, and Stai Bhava. Srila Rupa Goswami states here and that according to some learned scholars, the three kinds of transcendental mellow so far described, servitude, fraternity, and parental affection, are sometimes mixed. For example, the fraternal feelings of Balaram are mixed with servitude and parental affection. He's primarily in the friendship aras with Krishna, but there is a mixture of servitude. He's always serving Krishna and feels protective of Krishna because he's older than Krishna. Similarly, King Yudhisthira's attraction for Krishna is also mixed with parental affection and servitude because he's older than Krishna. And he's also serving Krishna. Similarly, the transcendental mellow of Ugrasena, Krishna's grandfather, is mixed with servitude and parental affection. Hold on a second. The affection of all the elderly gopis in Vrindavan is a mixture of parental love, servitude, and fraternity, because the elderly gopis, they are not engaged in the conjugal relationship with Krishna. So they're parental. You know, they see Krishna like their son in the same mood as the son, and they're serving Krishna all the time, and also they're friends with Krishna. The affection of the sons of Madri, Nakula, and Sahadev, as well as the affection of the sage Narada, is a mixture of friendship and servitude. The affection of Lord Shiva, Garuda, and Uddhava is a mixture of servitude and fraternity. Means they're friends and they're servants too. It's interesting how you can have a mixture, but there's always one primary ras. And for Garuda, for example, its primary ras is servitude. Uddhava, primary ras is servitude. Lord Shiva, primary ras is servitude, but there's also some fraternity or friendship there. So it's not, it's like that even in this material world, the modes of nature, you don't find them in their original, let's say in their pristine state, there's always some mixture. A mixture of mode of goodness with passion and ignorance, or passion with goodness and ignorance, or ignorance with passion and goodness. It's like three primary colors. You usually find them mixed. So the next chapter is, wow, about the highest relationship with Krishna, highest category of relationships with Krishna, which is conjugal love, chapter 44, conjugal love. And we're going very quickly, because mainly we're just reading examples of these types of relationships right now. It's a little more technical when we get into the mixture of the different rasas at the end, which is called rasa bas. But this particular chapter, chapter 24, let's see how long it is. It's not that long, actually. We'll finish it tomorrow, most likely. And then we'll get into the fourth part, which deals with the indirect, fourth part of the nectar devotion, which deals with the indirect rasa and mixtures of different rasas, tasty mixtures or mixtures that are incompatible. So, chapter 44, devotional service in conjugal love. Of course, in the material world, the conjugal love is not the highest. It's, anyway, the lowest. I mean, if it's illicit, talking about illicit right now. Not if someone is licitly married and stuff like that. But anyway, it's the lowest in the spiritual world. It is the highest. And in the spiritual world, the conjugal love between Krishna and the gopis has nothing to do with material bodies or sense gratification. It's all just pure love. Like we were describing this morning in Bhagavatam class, when the gopis are praying to the goddess Kachiyani to have Krishna as their husband, they're not thinking, I want Krishna my husband because I want to enjoy with him. It's like people, generally, they want someone as their husband because he is handsome. He turns them on. He has money. Attractive girl because he, you know, he is ugly as hell. So anyway, so in the spiritual realm, it's just pure, the pure concept of giving pleasure, of serving. So all these different relationships, they're all serving relationships. One is serving in friendship. One is serving in parental love. One is serving in serving, obviously, Tasha, Bob. And one is serving in the conjugal relationship. A pure devotee's attraction for Krishna in conjugal love is called devotional service in conjugal love. That's a tautology. Although such conjugal feelings are not at all material, there's some similarity between the spiritual love and material activities. Therefore, persons who are interested only in the material activities are unable to understand the spiritual conjugal love, and these devotional reciprocations appear very mysterious to them. Rupa Goswami therefore describes conjugal love very briefly. The impetuses, that's the Vibhava, of conjugal lover Krishna and his dear consorts such as Radharani and her immediate associates. Lord Krishna has no rival, and no one is equal to him, and no one is greater than him. His beauty is also without any rival, and because he excels all others in the pastimes of conjugal love, he is the original object of all conjugal love. And actually, Krishna is called the person who conquers Cupid, Madan Mohan. So that means if we or anybody is attracted to Cupid in this material world, who is Cupid? Cupid is a demigod, and he's firing arrows that are the senses and the objects of the senses, specifically the objects of the senses. And when he hits you, you fall in love, or you get bewildered, and you forget about everything. Oh my God. Quite dangerous. It's like you could imagine, let's say if you had enemies on the battlefield, so you were fighting a war, and so we could fire an arrow. So you just get all bewildered and fall in love. If you had that arrow, you could actually defeat your enemies really easily. Just like it's described in the Ramayana, that Lord Ram had a different type of arrow that could bewilder, not with love, but just like bewilder one and cause one to forget things. And it would cause one, or cause the opposite side in a battle, to see their own soldiers, that means your opponent's soldiers, as their opponents. Let me explain what I mean. Once upon a time, Ram was in the forest, and he offended this poor girl named Sarpanaka, who is in love with him. Sarpanaka goes back to her brother's Karandushan and complains. And Dushan, they send, of course, 14 giants, and those 14 giants are killed by Lord Ram. But then they send 14,000 Rakshasas. That's a lot of Rakshasas. And these are not tiny Rakshasas. They're really big, horrendous monsters. Okay, 14,000. So what does Lord Ram do to defeat them? He fires his arrow of bewilderment. Not that all the Rakshasas fell in love with each other and started kissing each other. That's not the point. But they saw each other Rakshasa as Lord Ram. And then they started fighting each other, thinking that the other Rakshasas were Lord Ram, and they killed each other out. That's pretty good. So that's the bewilderment potency of one of the arrows of Lord Ram. So Cupid is something like that, or does something like that with his arrows. He fires his arrows at you, and boom! You get bewildered. Nunam pramata kurate bikarman. Yanindriya Paritya Aprinoti. This is a statement by Lord Rishabhati. And one gets crazy. And one forgets about, oh, spiritual life. Forget about that. Who cares about spiritual life? Where's love? Anyway, so it's quite interesting. So Krishna is known as Madan Mohan. It means he attracts Cupid. Cupid attracts everyone else or bewilders everyone else, but Krishna bewilders Cupid. Therefore, if we worship Krishna, we will never get bewildered by Cupid. And Radharani is called Madan Mohan Mohini. That means she who bewilders Krishna, who is the bewilderer of Cupid. Interesting. So in the Gita Govinda by Jayadev Goswami, one gopi tells her friend, Krishna is the reservoir of all pleasure within this universe. His body is as soft as the lotus flower, and his free behavior with the gopis, which appears exactly like a young boy's conjugal love. A pure devotee as follows. Let me offer my respectful obeisances. Oh, internet connection. Not to the internet connection, but there was a little problem with the internet connection. Let me offer my respectful obeisances to all the young coward girls whose bodily features are so attractive. Simply by their beautiful bodily attractive features, they are worshiping the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. Out of all the young gopis, Srimati Radharani is the most prominent. The beauty of Srimati Radharani is described as follows. Her eyes defeat the attractive features of the eyes of the Chakori bird. When one sees the face of Radharani, he immediately hates the beauty of the moon. Her bodily complexion defeats the beauty of gold. Thus, let us all look upon the transcendental beauty of Srimati Radharani. Krishna's attraction for Radharani is described by Krishna himself thus. When I create some joking phrases in order to enjoy the beauty of Radharani, Radharani hears these joking words with great attention. But by her bodily features and counterwords, she neglects me. And I even possess unlimited pleasure by her neglect of me. For she becomes so beautiful that she increases my pleasure 100 times. A similar statement can be found in Gita Govinda, wherein it is said that when the enemy of Kamsa, Shri Krishna, embraces Srimati Radharani, he immediately becomes entangled in a loving condition and gives up the company of all other gopis. So even in the perverted reflection in this material world, sometimes there's a lover and a beloved or whatever. And if the lady becomes angry, the man may say, oh, you look more beautiful when you're angry. So that's a perverted reflection of what's happening between Radha and Krishna. So whatever is here must be there, but it's there. There means the spiritual world. In its original, pure, pristine, ecstatic, full of bliss, knowledge, an eternal form. In the Pujavali of Rupa Goswami, it is stated that when the gopis hear the sound of Krishna's flute, they immediately forget all rebukes offered by the elderly members of their families. They just tell their families, Forget it. And you actually see that also in this world. Oh my God. When people are in love and even their families against their particular relationship, they just not only forget, but they actually chastise the elderly members of their family. Or they sneak, just like the story of Romeo and Juliet. They forget their defamation and the harsh behavior of their husbands. Their only thought is to go out in search of Krishna. When the gopis meet Krishna, the display of their exchanging glances as well as their joking and laughing behavior is called anubhava, or sub-ecstasy in conjugal love. In other words, the vibhava, they meet Krishna, and then the anubhava, the voluntary activities, you know, exchanging glances, joking, laughing. These are all anubhava expressions. Voluntary, not involuntary. In the Lita Madhava, Rupa Goswami explains that the movements of Krishna's eyebrows are just like the Yamuna, and that the smiling of Radharani is just like the moonshine. Wow. What a poetic metaphor. When the Yamuna and the moonshine come in contact on the bank of the river, the water tastes just like nectar, and drinking it gives great satisfaction. It is as cooling as piles of snow. Similarly, in the Pajabali, one constant companion of Radharani says, "My dear moon-faced Radharani, your whole body appears very content, and yet there are signs of tears in your eyes. Your speech is faltering, and your chest is also heaving. By all these signs, I can understand that you must have heard the blowing of Krishna's flute, and as a result of this, your heart is now melting." In the same Pajabali, there's the following description, which is taken as a sign of frustration in conjugal love. Srimati Radharani said, "Dear Mr. Cupid, please do not excite me by throwing your arrows at my body. Dear Mr. Air, please do not arouse me with the fragrance of flowers. I am now bereft of Krishna's loving attitude, and so, under the circumstances, what is the use of my sustaining this useless body? There's no need for such a body by any living entity. This is a sign of frustration and ecstatic love for Krishna." So this is the highest love story, pastimes you will ever encounter. Similarly, in the Dana Keli Komadi, Srimati Radharani, pointing to Krishna, says, "This clever boy of the forest has the beauty of a bluish lotus flower, and he can attract all the young girls of the universe. Now, after giving me a taste of his transcendental body, he has enthused me and elephant who has been enthused by a man ecstatic love with Krishna." Internet connection unstable again. At least it's lasting so far. The steady ecstasy of conjugal love is the original cause of bodily enjoyment. In the Pajabali, this original cause of union is described when Radharani tells one of her constant companions, "My dear friend, who is this boy whose eyelids, dancing constantly, have increased the beauty of his face and attracted my desire for conjugal love? His ears are decorated with buds of ashok flowers, and he has dressed himself in yellow robes. By the sound of his flute, this boy has already made me impatient." The conjugal love of Radha and Krishna is never disturbed by any personal consideration. It's a really important point. It's all based on the other. The undisturbed nature of the conjugal love between Radha and Krishna is described thus. Just a little distance away from Krishna was Mother Yashoda, and Krishna was surrounded by all of his friends. In front of his eyes was Chandravali, and at the same time, on a chunk of stone in front of the entrance to Braj, stood a demon known as Vrishasura. But even in such circumstances, when Krishna saw Radharani standing just behind a bush of many creepers, immediately his beautiful eyebrows moved just like lightning toward him. Another instance is described as follows. On one side of the courtyard, the dead body of Sankarsura. The dead body of Sankarsura was lying surrounded by many jackals. On another side were many learned brahmanas who were all self-controlled. They were offering nice prayers which were as soothing as the cool breeze in summer. In front of Krishna, Lord Baladev was standing, causing a cooling effect. But even amid all these different circumstances of soothing and disturbing effects, the lotus flower of ecstatic conjugal love that Krishna felt for Radharani could not wither. This love of Krishna for Radharani is often compared to a blooming lotus. The only difference is that Krishna's love remains ever increasingly beautiful. Conjugal love is divided into two portions. This is important. Vipralamba, or conjugal love in separation, and Sambhoga, or conjugal love in direct contact. Vipralamba, separation, has three divisions known as Purvavrag, or preliminary attraction before meeting. Mana, seeming anger, which is cause of separation. And Pravasa, or separation by a distance. Remember that. Purvavrag, Mana, and Pravasa. So, Purvavrag means just before Radha and Krishna meet. Radharani hears Krishna's flute and she's getting ready to meet Krishna. Mana means she gets really angry at Krishna, doesn't want it. Krishna makes her angry deliberately by telling her that she looks like his other girlfriend, Chandravali. He appears to be telling her that accidentally, but actually he's telling her that on purpose to make her angry. And she goes away, and then Krishna has to sometimes go and beg at her feet and cry tears, begging her to accept him back. And sometimes Krishna has to dress like a girl to associate with her again. Sometimes he has to dress like a palm reader to associate with her again. This is his plan. So this is Man, Radharani's Man, which is her anger, and Pravas, which means they're separated by a longer distance, you know, actual separation. When the lover and beloved have a distinct feeling of not meeting each other, that stage is called Purvavrag, or preliminary attraction. In the Pajavali, Radharani told her companion, "My dear friend, I was just going to the bank of the Yamuna, and all of a sudden a very nice boy whose complexion is like a dark blue cloud became visible in front of my eyes. He glanced over me in such a way that I cannot describe. But since this has occurred, I am sorry that I can no longer engage my mind in the duties of my household affairs." This is an instance of preliminary attraction for Krishna before meeting. In Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, 53rd chapter, verse 2, Krishna told the messenger Brahmana, who came from Rukmini, "My dear Brahmana, just like Rukmini, I cannot sleep at night and my mind is always fixed on her. I know that her brother, Rukmini, is against me, and that is due to his persuasion. My marriage with her has been canceled." This is another instance of preliminary attraction. Wow. As far as mana, or anger, is concerned, this is such an interesting aspect of Vipralamba. As far as mana, or anger, is concerned, Radharani saw Krishna enjoying himself. He became a little jealous because her special prestige was being dimmed. Therefore, she immediately left the scene and took shelter in a nice flower bush where the black drones were humming. Then, hiding herself behind the creepers, she began to express her sorrow to one of her consorts. This is an instance of a seeming disagreement. So, one story comes to mind is one time Krishna wanted to make Radharani angry. So at one point, Narada Muni was actually serving, this is Narada Muni's trickery, he was serving Radharani, and Krishna warned Radharani, said, "Don't believe this Narada Muni, he's a troublemaker." She didn't take it so seriously. So once upon a time, Krishna was very pleased with Narada Muni. And said, "Narada Muni, just ask for benediction anytime you want." And Narada Muni said, "Well, let's wait a little while. I'll ask for my benediction in the future." Okay. So shortly thereafter, Krishna was waiting to swing with Srimati Radharani. There was this nice flower swing, and Krishna was seated on it, and just waiting for Radharani to come. So Narada Muni said to Krishna, "I have a request, Krishna. I would like to see you on the swing with Lalita Devi." And Krishna said, "Okay, whatever you say, Narada Muni. I said I'll give you your request. I would bless you with whatever you ask for." So Lalita Devi goes on the swing with Krishna, they're swinging back and forth. Narada Muni flies to see Radharani and says, "Radharani, guess what? Krishna is now swinging with Lalita Devi instead of you." So she goes there and she's really angry. And finally, you know, Krishna has to make it up with her. And he explains to her, "Don't ever trust Narada Muni again. He's the one who starts all these problems." Okay. So finally, we'll talk about being out of contact. An example of Prabhas, or being out of contact because of living in a distant place, was given in the Pajavali as follows. Since the auspicious day when Krishna left for Mathura, Srimati Radharani has been pressing her head on one of her hands and constantly shedding tears. Her face is always wet now, and therefore there's no chance of her sleeping even for a moment. When the face becomes wet, the sleeping tendency is immediately removed. So when Radharani was always weeping for Krishna because of his separation, there was no chance of her getting any sleep for herself. In the Prahlada Samhita, Uddhava says, "The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda, panic-stricken due to being pierced by the arrows of Cupid, is always thinking of you, the gopis, and he is not even accepting his regular lunch, nor is he getting any proper rest." Of course, this is in regard to Krishna living in Dwarka later on in life, or later on in his pastimes, and Uddhava is his constant companion and advisor. So we will end here, and we will take a few questions about this most esoteric, elevated subject matter. Hold on one second. We will unmute everybody so you can ask questions. Let me make sure, wait, before you ask questions, let me make sure the speaker is on the right thing. Speaker. On the wall. Okay, so who has a question? Question, comment, argument? No one. Everybody understands 100%. Okay, Arjuna?
I can ask a question.
Yeah.
In Nectar Devotion, Chapter 18, and other places, there's lists of the qualities of a pure devotee given.
Yeah.
My question would be, what qualities would you give to somebody who is skeptical that, you know, that could be empirically accounted for, like, you know, why these people are Mahajans, and therefore their opinion can be trusted, and we could say all the people that have these qualities come to the same conclusions, more or less.
Can you be more specific with that question? Like,
what are the qualities
of someone who is a rascal?
No, what are the qualities of a Mahajan? A lot of the qualities given for a pure devotee, for someone, you know, who's an authority on spiritual subject matters, who you can trust what they say about Krishna consciousness, a lot of them you can't exactly empirically verify, so you wouldn't give them to a skeptic. But some of them you can, like being detached.
But these are secondary qualities. These are not... These are gona. They're not mukya. So, in other words, the qualities of a Vaishnava that are listed there are sometimes manifest and sometimes not manifest. Like you may say, Vaishnava is peaceful, but sometimes you see him getting angry.
Right.
So these are secondary qualities, and even the ones you can judge, sometimes they may appear, sometimes they may not appear. Krishna. Pleasing Krishna and the spiritual master. It is a Vaishnava, but we don't actually go through like...
I lost you for a sec. I don't know if it's my connection or yours.
It's my connection. The internet connection just gets unstable every once in a while.
Okay. It's just a few sentences.
Yeah. It happens regularly every 5 minutes. You know, there's a little loss of a few sentences. So anyway, these 26 qualities of a Vaishnava, they're sometimes manifest, sometimes not manifest. And sometimes you'll find contradictions to the manifestation of these qualities because of certain circumstances. Like a Vaishnava is supposed to be peaceful, but he'll be angry sometimes under certain circumstances. But the primary quality of a Vaishnava is what we look for is exclusive, one point of devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that's really what we're interested in. The other qualities, yes, that's nice. But even you can speculate and see some of those qualities, or even most of those qualities in other people who are not even Vaishnavas. I mean, sometimes you have descriptions of demons who are pretty qualified, you know, hospitable and all sorts of good qualities, except they're not devoted to Krishna, obviously.
So, well, they won't be fearless.
Yes, they might be, yeah.
Don't all the demons fear Vishnu, like fear death?
Well, I mean, you had a lot of the demons fighting Krishna, and they were pretty happy. They're chivalrous fighting Krishna. You have Kalyamana, who wasn't fearful of Krishna. He kept challenging Krishna. You had Pundrika, who wasn't fearful of Krishna. He was challenging Krishna. So you may have some of these qualities. I'm not saying all the qualities. So what we look for is exclusive devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead more than anything else, rather than just going one by one through these qualities. I mean, some people, the stupid people, are sometimes very fearless because they're just plain old stupid in the mode of ignorance. Sometimes people in the mode of ignorance appear to be very transcendental. You say, oh, he's in samadhi. I mean, just like there's that example where there was one guru who passed away, not in our movement, don't worry. He's not one of our gurus. He passed away, and the devotees, not devotees, but his followers kept saying, oh, Guru Maharaj is in samadhi, because he appeared to be very peaceful. And then what happened is that after a few days, the body started to smell, and they understood Guru Maharaj had died. He was in his samadhi. So you can't always judge. You can't judge things according to these external manifestations. And even sometimes someone could act like he is displaying those external qualities. I mean, a good actor can act like he's exhibiting astasattvika bhavas, you know, the bhavas or these yavachari bhavas. I mean, I could do that. And I'm a good actor. Well, maybe I'm not a good actor. So someone could do that. But what we look for is devotion to Krishna. I mean, and also, as far as an acharya is concerned, someone who sets an example, yad yad acharati shrestas tatat evetaru janaha, someone who sets an example, someone who's steady in his devotional service, someone who's always serving Krishna. I mean, look at Arjuna. He was serving Krishna with violence, right? I mean, serving Krishna by killing people. I mean, phew, that's pretty good. So what I look for is exclusive devotion.
Rather than could we say consistency between what they preach and what they do?
Yeah, consistency between what they preach, yeah.
And not and changing what they... I mean, they could be consistent and then change it every 5 years. That wouldn't be a good sign.
Not changing the principles of devotional service, but they may actually change the details. You know, like someone 20 years ago may have said, you know, you should always wear a dhoti or sari, whatever, depending on your gender. And nowadays, someone may say, don't wear a dhoti when you're preaching in certain circumstances. You know, So the consistency is in terms of the principles of devotional service. But an expert acharya, Prabhupada points this out, an acharya is expert in adjusting the details according to time, place, and circumstance, rather than being fixed on certain details, but he adjusts the details, but he never adjusts the siddhanta, or the conclusion of devotional service, or the essential aspects of devotional service. I mean, sometimes you'll find people who adjust the external aspects of devotional service, like we had someone many, many years ago in a farm community named New Vrindavan, invented his own process of devotional. But that's not Krishna consciousness. So you have to be very careful of judging things externally. I mean, people would judge Lord Nityananda externally sometimes. Lord Nityananda was an avadut. I mean, like the wind, right?
But surely there's some qualities that, say, Srila Prabhupada has which are exceptional. Like, you know, the way when he was leaving his body, even though there should have been physical pain, there was no indication that he was suffering.
Well, he was transcendental. He was transcendental. I wouldn't say that if you found a devotee suffering from pain, that would indicate he's not qualified. You know, I really wouldn't go that far.
No,
because
what
you see is pain may be a symptom of ecstasy and separation from Krishna. Just like Ramchandra Puri, he was actually criticizing his spiritual master for lamenting. Whereas in fact, his spiritual master was engaged in spiritual lamentation. So you have to be really careful about judging a Vaishnava externally. That's the point. You know, you may think, oh, he doesn't fit into all the, you tick off all the 26 qualities of the Vaishnava and he's missing like 6 of them. Therefore, he couldn't be a Vaishnava. Acharya mam viganam yan navamanyeta karichit namachya buddhisu yata sarvadeva mayoguru. One has to be very, very cautious. Or Vamsi Das Babaji. You know, did you ever read about Vamsi Das Babaji?
I can't remember.
I mean, if you would read about him and what he did, and even with his deities, threatening his deities, you would think, oh my God, is this guy a devotee? But he's actually one of the greatest devotees. You know, he used to chastise his deities and you know, take a stick to the deities sometimes. Not hit them, actually, but threaten them. So you would think, you know, oh my God. So this guy, you know, we got to chastise this guy. But actually, he was a great devotee, and that was ascertained by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So one has to be very careful. The Marchabudya Suyata Sarvadeva Mayoguru, to judge so much from the external viewpoint of Vaishnava. And of course, a Vaishnava who is an Acharya is setting an example for others.
Yeah, like we could establish the exalted nature of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's consciousness, and then based on his statements, we can establish the exalted nature of Vamsi Das Babaji.
Yeah, because he said that Vamsi Das Babaji, not Brahmachari, Vamsi Das Babaji was a great pure devotee. But he didn't give us the standard to judge. He just said Vamsi Das Babaji, and Vamsi Das Babaji was doing all these things that we would just like say, wow, how could he be a devotee, you know? So we gotta be really careful. What's that?
Obviously, a definition based on externals isn't going to catch everything. But what it could do is catch people that we can take as authorities. And then through taking their authority, we can get the rest.
Yes. You know, a certain acharya. Yes, that's why it's important to accept guru. So the guru can actually ascertain and tell us. You know, like if you look at here's another example. If you look at Lord Rishabhadev, or even Shukadeva Goswami. I mean, if you saw someone running around naked, would you consider that person to be very exalted? I mean, you're in New Zealand, so all of a sudden there was a young boy, 16 years old, running around naked, going to Bhagavatam class. I mean, this is what was happening. Shukadeva Goswami was running without any clothes, you know, and the only people who could recognize that were the great sages. on the bank of the Ganges. So it's important to have some authority who can tell you that this is a great devotee. Because if you start to impose even, 26 qualities of a Vaishnava standard, and you just have a checklist, you may be really off. In either way, you may actually, because of our imperfect senses, tendency to make mistakes and cheating, etc., you may actually ascertain that a materialist is a great devotee. I mean, you may see someone chanting and in ecstasy and rolling on the ground, but Prabhupada talked about, Darwin in such a derogatory, there's the internet connection again. Wait a second. Prabhupada talked about Darwin in such a derogatory fashion, and you may think, why is Prabhupada being so angry at this poor Charles Darwin, who's just like an innocent soul who was on the Beagle. That was a ship, actually. So one has to be very careful. Because even in our movement, actually, this is an interesting thing. In our movement, we generally think that the people who are these great, GBCs, great, that's what GBC stands for. Great big C. I forget what C stands for. Great big. Anyway, whatever it stands for. I'm GBC. I can do that. So we may think that, someone who's a guru, he's the best devotee, someone who's sitting on a Vyasa-san like me. But, anyway, you have that story that Prabhupada told that the jackal was sitting on the Vyasa-san, or the throne. And they didn't discover he was a jackal until the other jackals started crying. So we have to be very, very careful. The greatest devotee in the movement, maybe some really humble devotee who's cleaning the toilets. I mean, right now, there's some discussion about, who should have the biggest samadhi. I want a samadhi that's 10 feet tall. Actually, well, that's not big enough for me. I want a samadhi that's like 200 feet tall. Maybe I'll turn the new Goloka temple into a samadhi after I leave this world. So anyway, there's some discussion has to, literally, like who should get the bigger samadhi or have a better place in the, I mean, it's actually quite interesting because in the Gaudiya Math, there was some discussion in the Calcutta Math who would have the best room. And then we're discussing who will have the best samadhi look. But the greatest devotee, maybe some humble grahasta who was just like, who's not educated at all and who's just like an electrician, a humble electrician. Sorry about that. I know you're an electrician. who's simply going into malecha's houses and fixing the electricity in their houses. He may be the greatest devotee, but you wouldn't know that. How would any of us know from externally? So we have to be very careful when we're around Vaishnavas in judging. Of course, certain things, like if someone like Prabhupada is making many devotees, I mean, there's certain standards, yeah. What is Prabhupada? How do I ascertain that Prabhupada's the greatest devotee? Some people say by the amount of devotees he made or by going around the world, etc. I mean, these are interesting. But my standard of judgment is how strictly he followed the orders of his spiritual master. And we see amongst Prabhupada's godbrothers, Prabhupada was the strictest one in following the orders of his spiritual master. He took the orders of his spiritual master as his life and soul. I would say more than anyone else. And to me, that is the standard. Not how many Sanskrit verses Prabhupada knew. I mean, Prabhupada was not the most expert Sanskrit personality or professor or whatever. But Prabhupada accepted the order of his spiritual master. And just like Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he ascertains that someone who could not even recite or the Bhagavad Gita properly, was the best or one, or was the real knower of the Bhagavad Gita, because he took the order of his spiritual master. So there's a standard of judgment right there. One who takes the order of the spiritual master and the mission of the spiritual master is life and soul, that person is actually exalted. And even though that person may get angry, that person may act like an avaduta, that person may whatever, if that person is taking the order of his spiritual master, his life and soul, that's a sign of being exalted. Okay, there's an external standard for you, if you're asking for one. And I think that's quite interesting. It's good.
Right, but if we use that to someone who's a skeptic, they'll just say that's circular because you have to assume the order of the spiritual master.
That's all right. We're not going to, if someone's a skeptic, we don't care. Just chant Hare Krishna and see if it works for you. For him, we approach in a little bit different way. A skeptic, if someone that doesn't have faith, for the doubting soul, there's happiness neither in this world nor in the next, Krishna says. So for a skeptic, we would say, don't have to believe in anything. Try this process, try chanting, and see what it does for you. That's how I would approach a skeptic. Because it's useless. Anybody who is a skeptic to take up Krishna consciousness other than giving them the holy names and letting them experience it themselves, then they change. Tako pratishta shuti na navina. Argumentation is not going to convince someone who is skeptical. But an experience will. And so my preaching strategy is give people an experience in Krishna consciousness through prasadam, through the holy names, and let them, because really, where does faith come from? Faith comes from association with devotees, not through argumentation and logic. You can argue with people to, what cow jumps over the moon or something like that, and people don't. I've never seen people convinced because of argumentation. I've seen people convinced because of experience. Okay, we got to end because it's time for my Betty Bye time. Anyway.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you for the nice questions. So we'll see everybody tomorrow, and we'll continue with our study of the chapter of conjugal love in Krishna consciousness. Not conjugal love of the jiva souls, conjugal love of Krishna and the gopis and Krishna and his wives. And we're nearing the end of Nectar Devotion. It's pretty amazing. Very close to the end of Nectar Devotion. All right. All glories to his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.